And get started now. My name is Rob Bowman, and I am pleased and honored to be participating in this great conference. And this afternoon, I'm going to be talking with you on the subject, Book of Mormon Problems, What They Teach Us About Biblical Reliability. Now, I hope that that subtitle gives you the idea or the understanding that this isn't just about the Book of Mormon. It is about looking at the Book of Mormon as a way of getting a clearer picture of what the evidence in support of the Bible actually is. There are a number of reasons to do that, as we'll get into here. Just a little bit of an introduction. The Book of Mormon is one of the four standard works. That's the term that Mormons use for them. The four standard works or scriptural collections of the LDS Church. So it's just one of four. Those four are the Bible in the King James Version, with at least some of Joseph's revisions to the Bible in footnotes or an appendix. The Book of Mormon, which is called the keystone of the LDS religion. Doctrine and Covenants, which is a collection of supposed revelations, nearly all of which came from Joseph Smith as well. Although there were a few additions made in the 20th century, the last one was in 1978. And then Pearl of Great Price, which is a small collection of very small texts, a little bit of a hodgepodge. It includes the Book of Abraham, a notorious work, which Joseph claimed to have translated from ancient Egyptian papyri, and that had the writings of Abraham and Jacob on it. And it turned out that those writings are ancient Egyptian funeral texts. Pagan Egyptian funeral text. A Joseph Smith history, which is his account of the finding of the Book of Mormon plates and some other matters related to the origins of his career as a prophet and a few other short texts as well. Now, Mormons usually claim that they believe both the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And you see here a couple of missionaries dressed up as the Bible and the Book of Mormon to illustrate that point. However, when problems in the Book of Mormon are raised by Christian critics of Mormonism, Mormons often claim that the Bible has the same kinds of difficulties as the Book of Mormon. In fact, Mormons view the Book of Mormon as more reliable than the Bible. One of their scriptures in the Pearl of Great Price collection I mentioned earlier is a little text from one of Joseph's letters, and this text is known as the Articles of Faith. And Article of Faith number 8 says, "We believe the Bible to be the Word of God as far as it is translated correctly. We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God." End of quote. Now, that statement... Obviously, there is a qualification placed upon the Bible's status as the Word of God that is not similarly placed on the Book of Mormon. And that qualification, as far as is translated correctly, even though hypothetically or in the abstract, an evangelical Christian would agree with that, the way Mormons interpret this, it's a loophole big enough to drive a truck through it. Because it basically means anything that's in the Bible that doesn't seem to fit our current understanding of the church's doctrine is probably the result of some kind of loss of text or distortion of the text or some other kind of a problem. This attitude is illustrated by a statement by one of the presidents of the LDS Church, one of the successors to Joseph Smith, Ezra Taft Benson, mid to late 20th century. Benson said, "Unlike the Bible, which passed through generations of copyists, translators, and corrupt religionists who tampered with the text, the Book of Mormon came from writer to reader in just one inspired step of translation." And so, according to the traditional understanding in Mormonism, then the Bible has been corrupted and is not reliable through and through, and it has to be understood and even corrected in light of Joseph Smith's revelations, including the Book of Mormon. Mormons bring up the same litany of biblical difficulties as skeptics do when they're making this kind of argument. So Mormons will argue well, the Bible has problems because we don't have the original manuscripts of the New Testament or Old Testament writings. There are a number of locations mentioned in the Bible. We don't know where those are, which is a similar problem that occurs with the Book of Mormon. There's a lack of archaeological evidence for a lot of things in the Bible. You can't prove everything in the Bible with archaeology either, they will say. And there are many things in the Bible that are hard to understand, and so on and so on. And so these kinds of objections, which are very similar or in many cases identical to what you would get from an agnostic or a skeptic, are used by Mormons to call into question the claim that the Bible is on a better footing evidentially than the Book of Mormon. That's really the goal here. Their intent is to remove any rational basis for faith in the Bible so that faith in the Book of Mormon can stand without being rational on the basis of spiritual experience alone. So it's not as though the Mormon claims that the Bible is completely unreliable and just you shouldn't even bother reading it. Mormons read the Bible, they study it, they accept a lot of what the Bible says, especially in terms of the historical narratives of the Bible. They accept that those things happened. However, they can't accept it without qualification because it contradicts some of their latter-day revelations. And in order to defend their belief in the Book of Mormon, despite its patent difficulties, as we will see, Mormons will retreat to this kind of ultra-pietistic stance, this fideistic stance, if you're familiar with the term fideism, meaning you just believe it without evidence. They retreat to that by saying, we know the Bible and the Book of Mormon are true based on the testimony of the Spirit, based on our spiritual experience, what is often called a burning in the bosom, and not on the basis of any factual evidence. In order to make this work, though, the Mormon feels impelled to argue that the Bible is in at least as bad a shape in terms of the evidence, if not worse, than the Book of Mormon. Now, what happens when a Mormon finally recognizes and acknowledges that the Book of Mormon isn't true, which does happen? What do they do? If they can no longer believe the Book of Mormon, they've already been predisposed by this line of reasoning, which is used by Mormons all around them, to reject the Bible as well. If the Book of Mormon can't be trusted and the Bible has even bigger problems, or at least as bad a set of problems as the Book of Mormon, then if I can't believe the Book of Mormon, I can't believe the Bible either. So part of my concern here is that when we're reaching out to Mormons and we're showing them problems in their scriptures and in their doctrines, that we're not simply pulling out the rug from under their feet and leaving them with the idea that there's nothing that can be trusted, but at the same time we're showing them that there is a more reliable foundation for faith in Christ, and that is what we find in the Bible. So by answering their reasoning in an effective manner, by giving solid answers to their misunderstandings of the evidence and their comparisons between the Book of Mormon and the Bible, we can prepare them for the time when they do realize that something is wrong with the Book of Mormon or other aspects of Mormonism. Now, that might not happen in your conversation with them. It might happen later. But if you're helping to sow the seeds of confidence in the Bible, regardless of what they end up realizing about the Book of Mormon, once they come to the understanding that what they've been taught in the Mormon religion is false, they still have some chance of believing the Bible to be trustworthy. So we're going to look at some of these comparisons that Mormons make between the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and we're going to see how we can respond to these kinds of arguments. And I'm only going to cover a few examples in this presentation. There are more in the handout than I have time to go through with you this afternoon. So first of all, as is commonly known, the Book of Mormon was supposedly translated by Joseph Smith by a supernatural gift from a set of gold plates that an angel showed him in 1827, allowed him to take into custody in late 1827. Those gold plates are not around for us to look at. Nobody knows where they are. You can't go look at them, and so we don't have the gold plates. And so many Christians will point out to Mormons, why should I believe the Book of Mormon? We don't even have the gold plates to go look at and compare with the English text. And the Mormons' response to that is, well, we don't have the original manuscripts for the Bible either. So you don't, we don't have originals for our book. You don't have originals for your book. What's the difference? And they'll say, in fact, it's worse because you have lots of copies and they don't agree with one another. There are so many variants in the manuscripts. And then they'll quote somebody like Bart Ehrman saying that there are more variants in the New Testament manuscripts than there are words in the New Testament. And they'll say, you can't argue that the Book of Mormon is unreliable because we don't have the originals, because the situation is at least as bad for the Bible, if not worse. Now, when evangelicals hear criticisms of the Bible like this, from wherever source they may come, their first inclination is to want to blow away the objection with evidence. And that's not wrong. We want to explain why the argument is a bad argument, or the bad objection to the Bible. But we also need to help people understand why this issue comes up in the first place. And this is a perfectly good example. So let's take the Book of Mormon. Why is it that we don't have the gold plates? Is it because somebody just, you know, put them down somewhere and we can't find them? No. We don't have the gold plates because if they ever even existed, which is a serious question, apparently they were either reburied and nobody knows where, or supposedly many people think in the LDS church that they were taken away by the angel that showed them to Joseph in the first place. Maybe they're in heaven. They don't know. Nobody knows. So here we have these gold plates. If they existed, legitimate artifacts that could be examined and studied by scholars the way people study biblical manuscripts. But we don't have them. There's no access to them because, for some reason, we were prevented from keeping them for that kind of purpose. Moreover, the only other persons that saw these plates besides Joseph Smith were a group of 11 men who were either members of his family or members of one of his main supporters' family. What about the Bible? Why don't we have the original manuscripts for the Bible? We don't have the original manuscripts because they were made of perishable materials. Materials that we know from other examples of this were used commonly for writing books and other written materials in the ancient world. In other words, we have this problem precisely because the Bible is what it claims to be, a collection of ancient texts written on perishable materials. If that's the case, you would not expect 2,000 years later to have the original manuscripts to be examined. They didn't have vacuum-sealed glass cases in which to place these manuscripts so that they would be preserved. So even before we answer the objection, we can point out that there's a good reason why we don't have the original manuscripts, and there is a at least confusing, if not very dubious, answer for why we don't have the gold plates. Nobody questions that there was an original manuscript for the Gospel of John, for example. The only question is, how good is our copy of, or our copies of the Gospel of John compared to the original? But in the case of the Book of Mormon, virtually everybody outside the Mormon religion doubts that the plates ever existed. They have no reason to think that they did. Now, with the Book of Mormon, the idea of having texts like what you have in the Book of Mormon, running hundreds of pages, okay, so we're not talking about a little inscription on a piece of jewelry here, but running hundreds of pages on gold plates constructed in the ancient Americas is an absurd proposition. Why is that absurd? Well, when people did write things on gold plates or any kind of metal plates in the ancient world, it was very short pieces of text, not long books. We don't know of any comparable collection or library of texts in the ancient world written on metal plates, of any kind of metal, let alone gold plates. And the technology to do this, or to do anything even remotely like it, did not exist at the time the Book of Mormon was supposedly written in the ancient Americas. And that's anywhere in the Americas you want to speculate. So there's just good, solid reasons to think that this simply didn't happen. In the case of the Bible, there are no problems whatsoever regarding the types of materials on which the biblical manuscripts were written and copied. There's just no issue there whatsoever. Again, comparing the lack of the originals with the Book of Mormon with the lack of originals with the Bible is a misconception of the issue here. There are no copies of any portion of the Book of Mormon in its supposed original language, which is supposedly a form of ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic, perhaps with some kind of Hebrew component. In the case of the Bible, we have thousands of copies of the biblical texts that are extant, that means they're available to be looked at, in museums and libraries all over the world, in numerous major cities of the world, and these manuscripts date from the 2nd century B.C. on. In fact, there's a silver scroll from the 6th century B.C. that has the priestly benediction from number 6, 24 to 26, inscribed on the scroll. But other than that, the earliest biblical manuscript per se would be 2nd century B.C. So that's a tremendous difference between the two alleged scriptures. The one supposed copy of any portion of the gold plates exists in one copy, that is a copy of the alleged copy made by Joseph Smith from the gold plates and given to his associate Martin Harris, who took it off to New York City to show to a classic scholar named Charles Anthon in 1827, or early, that should actually say early 1828. So much for the inerrancy of my presentation. Years later, Joseph Smith claimed that he had written out a translation of the characters on the same piece of paper, and that Anthon had told Martin Harris that the characters were authentic, genuine, ancient characters, and that the translation that Joseph had provided was accurate. In fact, supposedly, Anthon said something like, the best translation he'd ever seen from the Egyptian. Now, Anthon himself was asked about this later, and in two different letters, he stated categorically this was false. He said that the characters were a hodgepodge of markings, some of which might look like ancient letters, most of which did not, and not an actual language or coherent text at all. Furthermore, even on this copy of the transcript that Joseph gave to Martin Harris, allegedly, there is no translation on the paper. And if there had been, no one, not Anthon, not anyone, could have validated it in 1828. Because, first of all, the characters were not Egyptian, not even on the copy that we're talking about here. You see an image in the slide there. And secondly, at the time, no one in America could read ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. The Rosetta Stone had only recently been decoded, and the very beginnings of learning how to read Egyptian hieroglyphics was taking place in Europe at this very time. Nobody in America knew anything about how to read those characters or those texts. So essentially, Joseph Smith is now caught in a lie about what Anthon supposedly said in validating his translation. So the lack of any authentic copies of these supposed gold plates means that we have to trust Joseph as to what was on them, if anything was on them, and if they even existed. To some extent, we have to accept the word of his 11 friends that he had some plates, although they really can't testify as to what was on the plates if he had any. They can't say that it was even written in Egyptian. They don't know. They had no way of knowing. They certainly couldn't have speculated even as to what it said. On the other hand, the many variants in the biblical manuscripts, which everybody refers to as a big problem, is actually a great blessing in disguise because it confirms that what we have was freely copied by people who did not have others looking over their shoulder telling them, you better write this or I'll kill you. You know, but rather they just freely copied what was passed around and then passed down to us. And because the variants are almost all extremely minor, spelling mistakes and that sort of thing, we know that it's been sent down to us, transmitted down to us, essentially without any serious change or alteration. Now let's take a second issue. Again, there are many issues we could use to illustrate the point, but I'm only going to look at a few. The second one has to do with locations in the Book of Mormon and in the Bible. Christians often point out we can't verify locations mentioned in the Book of Mormon. There's no way to find Zarahemla or Nephi, Lehi, or any of these other cities that are mentioned in the Book of Mormon, or the other kinds of locations that are mentioned in the Book of Mormon in the New World setting. We can't verify the locations of any of those. On the other hand, in the Bible, Mormons will say, there are also places mentioned in the Bible that we can't locate. There are a lot of places in the Bible we don't know where they were, or we're not sure. So what's the difference? Well, the difference is, in the case of the Book of Mormon, we can't verify any New World locations. Not one. In fact, not only can we not verify specific locations of specific places, we don't even know in what part of the Western Hemisphere we're supposed to look. We don't know what general region we're supposed to be finding these places. In the case of the Bible, yes, there are some places mentioned that we can't locate for sure. But that's because these were either extremely small villages or hamlets, you know, 15, 20 people living in them or something, that obviously would not leave any kind of archaeological footprint, or they are places from pre-literate times, from 3,000, 4,000 years or more ago. And we're not going to be able to find archaeological evidence for places like that. On the other hand, we have certain knowledge of hundreds of biblical locations, hundreds, maybe thousands. It's a lot of places. Here is a map of biblical locations, and this map comes from LDS.org. So this is on the official website of the LDS Church. And you'll notice, and you may not be able to see it from where you're sitting, but you'll notice there's a lot of places that are marked in terms of where these biblical place names are to be located. So we know where Jerusalem was and still is, of course. We know where Damascus was and Tyre and Sidon. It goes on and on. There are also a few places that are marked with question marks. There's a couple of potential locations for Ur, for example, that are mentioned. The Ur that Abraham left to go to the Promised Land. We're not sure, biblical scholars are not sure where to put Ur. So yeah, there's a few places like that. Mount Ararat, people to this day still debate where Mount Ararat would have been located, and even Mount Sinai. So that's a difficulty. So yes, we don't know where every place mentioned in the Bible existed, but we know so many of them that it's really just a matter of some minor cleanup operations or dealing with places that existed so long ago, you're not going to find any, signs saying, Mount Ararat 5 miles this way. You know, it's not going to happen. We can pinpoint numerous locations just in Paul's journeys alone. And this map here, which is from BibleStudy.org, shows numerous locations that Paul visited in his travels, as mentioned in the book of Acts and in the epistles of Paul. And there are just a bunch of these, and there's no question about the location of these various cities that he visited, and the island of Crete and so forth. All these places, we know where they are. And that's just in a very small part of the Bible. Now, what about the Book of Mormon lands? Mormons themselves, forget about what non-Mormons might think, which, you know, basically non-Mormons think there were no Book of Mormon lands. But Mormons themselves can't agree on where the Book of Mormon lands are to be placed. The traditional view was that there was the Book of Mormon refers to a land northward and a land southward and says that they were connected by a narrow neck of land. Now, even if you didn't have the slide up in front of you, you'd probably immediately think of the Western Hemisphere as a whole. The northern, the land northward would be North America, the land southward would be South America, and the narrow neck of land would be Central America. And you would be right, according to most Mormons throughout the 19th and much of the 20th century. That was the traditional view. However, in the last 50 years or so, there's no exact cutoff date here, but in approximately the last 50 years or so, there's been a shift in the Mormon intellectual community where the dominant academic view, for example, the view that is normally represented by professors at the Brigham Young University, is that the Book of Mormon lands were confined to a small part of Central America. Essentially, most of Guatemala and a little bit of southern Mexico. So a part of what is known as ancient Mesoamerica. Now, that's the dominant academic view in the Mormon religion. However, many Mormons disagree with this. Why do they do that? Because the traditional location for the last big battle that ended the Book of Mormon story is a hillside that Mormons call Cumorah, which they have traditionally identified as the burial spot of the gold plates in upstate New York, where Joseph Smith supposedly found them or was shown them by the angel in the 1820s. So if you look on the map there, Moroni's Cumorah, that's the Cumorah or the hillside where the angel Moroni supposedly showed Joseph the plates that he had buried in that same location 14 centuries earlier. However, according to the BYU scholars, the true location of Cumorah, where Mormon died in the final after the final battle, where he made his last entries, that Cumorah is in Central America. So what you have here is that the entire Book of Mormon story for 1,000 years, and actually more than 1,000 years. Takes place in this very small part of Mesoamerica. And then, for some reason, Mormon's son Moroni, who later becomes the angel Moroni, goes on a thousands of miles trek up through Central America, all the way out of Mexico, all the way up through North America to the Great Lakes region in order to bury these gold plates on the hillside where Joseph Smith can discover them 14 centuries later. And by the way, if these were real gold plates, they weighed about 200 pounds. Now, there are a lot of problems with that story that I'd love to get into, but I can't. One big geographical problem for the Book of Mormon is where to put the four C's. A verse in the Book of Mormon called Helaman 3:8 says, "They began to cover the face of the whole earth," that is the people, "began to cover the face of the whole earth from the sea south to the sea north, from the sea west to the sea east." Now there's no way to get four seas for the ancient Mesoamerican hypothesis of the location of Book of Mormon lands. There's the Gulf of Mexico and there's the Pacific Ocean. And only with the greatest creativity can you come up with three, using the Yucatan Peninsula to separate the Gulf of Mexico into two bodies of water. You just can't get four, and nor can you get them to fit anywhere close to the points of the compass. So in the leading Mormon scholar's reconstruction of Book of Mormon geography, John Sorensen's theory, the sea west and the sea east are virtually exactly north and south of the land. And this is the top scholar on the subject for Mormonism. There's just no way to get the four seas, and there's no way to get them in the right place. For this reason, many non-scholars in the Mormon faith now favor a so-called heartland theory, in which the action of the Book of Mormon events took place largely in the Great Lakes region. According to this theory, four of the five Great Lakes are the four seas mentioned in Helaman 3:8. Now, there are a number of problems with this. I can't go into all the details. Even the Mormon scholars think this is bunk, so I don't really need to refute it. But I'll just point out one thing. In order to make this work, first of all, you have to ignore the fifth sea, which is Lake Superior, and you have to have virtually all of the lands inhabited by the Book of Mormon peoples living south of the South Sea. Whereas Helaman 3:8, if it means anything, means that the people lived in the land surrounded by the four seas, not outside that region of land. So it just doesn't work. Now let's talk about external evidence. We've talked about the originals not being available. We've talked about the geographical issues. Let's talk about the external evidence. Christians are often pointing out to Mormons that they cannot confirm the Book of Mormon's historical accuracy or reliability with archaeology, even though there are Book of Mormon scholars and archaeologists trying to defend the Book of Mormon archaeologically. It's just not working. In fact, you know, you can read books by Sorensen and others. They'll go on for hundreds of pages, and at the end, and maybe they'll say this at the beginning too, they'll say, okay, we've talked about all the evidence, but at the end of the day, the reason why we know the Book of Mormon is historical fact is because we have a testimony in our hearts that it's true. Now, with the Bible, the Mormons will point out you can't prove the Bible by archaeology either. And sometimes they'll make really facile points here, such as you can't prove that the God of the Bible exists using archaeology. You're never going to be able to prove that. You can't prove that Jesus rose from the dead using archaeology. I mean, come on, you can't prove those kinds of things using archaeology. Well, quite so. However, there's something not being noticed here. Now, Mormon apologists rightly argue that the lack of evidence for something in the Book of Mormon does not prove that it didn't exist. The mantra or the kind of maxim that is often cited here is the maxim, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Evangelical Christians use this all the time in pointing out that even if we can't verify everything in the Bible, that doesn't mean it's not true. It just means we don't have evidence that will necessarily corroborate it. And that's fine. The lack of evidence for some specific place or person or event in the Bible or in the Book of Mormon does not falsify it, doesn't show that it's not historical. So I would agree with that. You can't argue against the Book of Mormon just by saying, well, have you been able to prove where Zarahemla is? No? Okay, well, the whole thing is bunk then. No, you can't. That's not a good argument. The problem on one level is that that's missing the forest for the trees. That's like saying you can't find the particular tree that has this particular mark on the side in the bark, and so the forest doesn't exist. No, that's silly. There's the forest. You know, But here, what we have is a situation where the Book of Mormon claims there was an entire civilization that inhabited the entire region of land, whatever land that was, for a millennium, 1,000 years, and they can't find the civilization. They can't find the culture. Now, that's a problem. That would be like saying that it's the same kind of problem if we can't find some specific artifact or location verifying a particular event in Roman history, that that's somehow the same thing as not being able to verify that Rome ever existed. That's crazy. Now, it's not merely, though, a lack of evidence. And if there's one thing I hope that you'll take away from this with regards to issues pertaining to the historical credibility of the Book of Mormon, it might be this point. The problem isn't merely a lack of evidence. The problem is we do have evidence. We have abundant evidence for peoples and cultures in ancient Mesoamerica, but nothing matching the Nephites, the people that supposedly were ruling this civilization for the better part of 1,000 years. The Book of Mormon claims that they were in charge, if not the only ruling people in that land for a millennium. So the question then becomes, if you look at the archaeological evidence for the various people groups and cultures in ancient Mesoamerica, do you find anything that even approximates what you find the Book of Mormon claiming? And the answer is no, you do not. Now, with regards to the Bible, archaeology confirms the general biblical picture of the ancient Old World, its history, its cultures. It confirms the existence of the ancient Israelites and its neighboring peoples like the Assyrians and the Babylonians and later on the Romans. And it confirms many specific persons and events. Not all of them, but many of them. And nobody expects archaeology to prove everything in the Bible, nor would we demand that Mormonism prove everything in the Book of Mormon. We're talking about issues of general credibility, not being able to prove every last little detail. So the main problem for the Book of Mormon isn't a mere lack of evidence, but a mismatch between the Book of Mormon and the real-world evidence that we have, as we saw, for example, with the four C's. Now, here's an interesting, I think, point to remember, and that is that in real history, the further back you're looking into the ancient world, the less clear the details will generally be, the less external evidence you will generally find in support of what a text says, because the evidence is perishable. And so the further back you go, the less evidence has survived from that far back in the past. This is why we have no direct external evidence outside the Bible for the existence of Abraham. And I don't think we're going to find Abraham's camel driver's license anytime soon. We're not going to be able to find that kind of evidence. We have a little bit of evidence for King David, a reference to the house of David as some kind of a ruling house dating from not long after David would have lived. That's pretty nice, actually, considering how long ago we're talking. But still, it's rather a little. On the other hand, we have substantial evidence from outside the New Testament for both Jesus and John the Baptist, notably in the writings of the Jewish historian Josephus. So the closer you get to our present time, the more the evidence, external evidence that you find. The further back you go, the less evidence you tend to find. With the Book of Mormon, the closer to our time we look, the greater the mismatch with the external evidence. Now, there's no increase or decrease in evidence in support of the Book of Mormon because there isn't any for any part of it. But the greater the mismatch becomes as you get closer to our time. Now, why do I say that? The Book of Mormon claims that the entire land, again, whatever land this is, was Christianized throughout the first 2 centuries A.D. after Jesus appeared to the Nephites there in A.D. 34, right after his resurrection. So, according to the Book of Mormon, this land, this civilization, was thoroughly Christianized for 200-plus years. Now, archaeological evidence ought to be able to support that, but it doesn't. In fact, we have abundant evidence that ancient Mesoamerica was thoroughly pagan during that entire period. There is no hiccup. It's the same basic pagan culture before the first century AD, and it's basically the same after the second or third or fourth century AD. It's all the same basic culture. There's very little cultural change, and it's all thoroughly idolatrous, polytheistic, and pagan. Furthermore, the Book of Mormon describes those centuries, those first two centuries of the Christian era, as a golden age for the Nephites, followed by a cultural decline. In fact, in Mesoamerica, we find the exact opposite. We find that the Mayans, for example, were entering into their golden era in the 3rd or 4th century AD, right at the time that the civilization is supposed to be on the decline, according to the Book of Mormon. So this is a very serious mismatch. The Book of Mormon claims that the land, in fact, on the traditional reading, the entire hemisphere, was populated by Middle Eastern seafarers about 3000 BC and later by Israelites around the middle of the 6th century BC. However, the archaeological evidence shows that the ancient Mesoamerica was populated by people from Asia who came across the Bering Strait about 9,000 BC or so, plus or minus a millennium. No possible match with what the Book of Mormon says. The Book of Mormon describes civilizations, first the Jaredites and then later the Nephites, that are more or less Christian and struggling with the kinds of issues that Christian Europe and America faced 200 years ago. The ancient Mesoamerican archaeological evidence shows other peoples, most notably the Olmec and the Maya civilizations, that were thoroughly pagan. And I've already mentioned the Golden Age problem. Book of Mormon claims that people were doing heavy works of metallurgy 1,500 years before Christ. According to the archaeological evidence, serious metallurgy did not start emerging in Mesoamerica until about 600 years after Christ, which again raises the question of them making the gold plates even before that date, and for 1,000 years before that date. The Book of Mormon describes the peoples having herds of cattle and sheep and goats and having horses with chariots and all the rest of it. We know from archaeological studies that the ancient Mesoamericans did not have flocks or herds of any kind. The Book of Mormon issues, the theological or cultural issues that vex the authors, allegedly, of the Book of Mormon, are issues of concern to Christianity in the modern era. Unitarianism, the idea that God is simply one person and Jesus isn't God. Universalism, the idea that everyone's going to be saved, so it doesn't matter how you live in this life. Concerns about paid clergy, whether the canon of Scripture is closed, whether miracles still happen today. Those are the kinds of issues that the Book of Mormon prophets supposedly wrote about 2,000 or more years ago. What was actually going on in ancient Mesoamerica 2,000 years ago? Polytheism, idolatry, human sacrifice. But they didn't write about those things. He wrote about infant baptism and stuff like that. Finally, about the interpretation of these texts. Now here, there's not so much an objection that Christians make to the Book of Mormon as a point in its favor, according to the Mormons. Mormons are impressed by the fact that the Book of Mormon is actually a lot easier to understand than the Bible. They think this is a feature, not a bug. I am going to argue that it is not a feature, but it is a really big bug in the Book of Mormon. On the other hand, Mormons will point out, the Bible is very difficult to understand, and there are a lot of denominations as evidence of that, right? Because we can't seem to agree on what the Bible teaches on a number of subjects. Why is this the case? Well, it's the case because the Book of Mormon is modern. The Book of Mormon is easier to understand because it was written by somebody in our culture, in our civilization, in modern times, in our language, with our kinds of cultural points of reference, and 1,800 years of church history on which to draw theological terminology, concepts, ways of thinking, categories of thought, and so forth. So naturally, the Book of Mormon is easier to understand because it was written by one of us. It was written by somebody in our culture, our civilization. The Bible is very hard to understand in many places. I fully grant that. In fact, I revel in that fact. Because its difficulty of understanding by the modern mind is a testimony to the fact that it really is what it claims to be, a collection of ancient texts written by people in another part of the world, in other languages, in a completely different kind of society, doing things and used to things and points of reference and ways of thinking that are completely alien to us. So if the Book of Mormon were ancient like the Bible, you would expect to find those sorts of things in the Book of Mormon, but you don't. Instead, you find the Book of Mormon tidying up theological and pastoral controversies in 19th century Christianity and making everything very easy to understand because it was written in order to do just that. The Book of Mormon refers to its being plain or simple to understand something like 50 times. It also claims that many plain and precious things were taken away from the book, meaning the Bible, perhaps especially the New Testament. Now, the Bible rarely refers to plain speech, and it certainly never refers to Scripture as a whole as being plain or simple to understand. On the contrary, the Bible often acknowledges that its contents can be very difficult to understand. Jesus acknowledged that some of the things that he was saying to his disciples were hard for them to understand. 2 Peter 3:16 acknowledges that Paul's writings contain things that are hard to understand. So that's not a result of some later corruption of the New Testament text. That's the way it was. Even in Paul's and Peter's own day, how much more would you expect Christians in the 20th and 21st centuries to have difficulties understanding some of what Paul said? It's like reading somebody else's mail from 2,000 years ago. Naturally, there are going to be things where you're going, huh, what's going on there? That's what we would expect if the Bible is what it claims to be. It's what we don't find in the Book of Mormon. Let me give you a little bit of chronological perspective here on the Book of Mormon and the Bible. The Old Testament, and we don't need to quibble over dates between liberals and conservatives here. It doesn't matter. The Old Testament's written in the B.C. period. Finishes up around 400 B.C. or so. If you want to say 300 B.C., I don't care. If you want to say the 2nd century B.C. for Daniel, I don't care. The Old Testament is in the period before Christ. Somewhere during that period, according to the Book of Mormon, the first author wrote a part of the Book of Mormon, and that fellow was called Nephi. There's actually several people called Nephi in the Book of Mormon. Then later on, while the Book of Mormon story is still going on, we have the New Testament being written after Jesus' birth, life, death, and resurrection. The Book of Mormon story allegedly continues and climaxes with the destruction of the Nephite civilization in the early 400s AD. And then hundreds more years go by before Joseph Smith is given the gold plates and told to translate them into what we call the Book of Mormon. So that's the history here. And as you can see, if Nephi to Moroni, if those authors were really ancient authors living during that period, you would expect to find significant cultural disconnects between their writings and the way people in our day and time think, or even Joseph Smith's day and time. Just like you find when you're reading stuff in the Bible, and you go, but I don't understand what's going on here. You don't have that problem with the Book of Mormon, and that's because it really does date from the time of Joseph Smith. So I mentioned earlier, the Book of Mormon authors, allegedly, from Nephi to Moroni, are concerned about a number of issues that they claim were issues of their day. But these don't make any sense in that historical context. Paid clergy, people wearing expensive clothing, infant baptism. The Nephite civilization is dying and being overrun by wild savages, and Moroni is writing an epistle criticizing Christians for baptizing their kids. It's the most bizarre disconnect. Baptism being needed for salvation. Denominational names. You know, the Book of Mormon, the authors are very vexed about the issue of names for churches other than Church of Christ. Why is that a concern in the ancient world? I don't know, but it was a big concern in Joseph Smith's day. Divine election, the whole Calvinism-Arminianism debate that we're all familiar with, that apparently was a big issue back in the ancient Book of Mormon context, supposedly. Universalism, atheism, that really takes the cake for me. Atheism, a problem in ancient Mesoamerica? Give me a break. Their problem was they had too many gods. They had gods everywhere. Everything was a god. No, that's a cultural mismatch. Corruption of the biblical text. Nobody was worried about that until, within the last 100 years or so before Joseph Smith came along. Whether miracles can still happen, and what about those people who've never heard the gospel? Those are the kinds of issues the Book of Mormon authors living in the ancient world supposedly wrote about. Those are all issues that people were debating in Joseph Smith's day. What do biblical authors write about? Well, they write about things like the worship of nature gods, which foods are clean and which are unclean, in the so-called boring parts of the Old Testament, relations with pagan nations, children being sacrificed on altars of fire to Moloch or other ancient pagan deities. In the New Testament, it's still almost as strange. They're arguing about scribal traditions regarding how to interpret the law of Moses, the Torah. They're arguing about why Jesus was crucified, whether it's okay to circumcise or to require Gentiles to be circumcised if they convert to Christianity. When's the last time you heard that being debated in church? It's been quite a while. Eating meat sacrificed to idols, these are cultural concerns in the first century. They're not cultural concerns in the 21st century, or the 20th, or the 19th, or the 18th, and so on. That's why the New Testament, as well as the Old Testament, is sometimes difficult for us to interpret and apply to us today, because we don't have those issues. We don't think in those terms. We live in a different culture. The Book of Mormon addresses religious and cultural concerns of the 18th and early 19th centuries. It does not address the religious and cultural concerns of ancient Mesoamerica, nor does it address those concerns that arose after 1830. You will not find the Book of Mormon addressing such issues as biological evolution. What about all the different religions in the world? The horrific threat of nuclear war? What about same-sex marriage or gender issues? They're not addressed in the Book of Mormon at all. Why not? Because nobody thought about those things in 1829. This collection of three different ways we can look at the evidence shows that the Book of Mormon can be securely dated to the latter part of the 18th century or the early part of the 19th century. It could not have been written any other time. And therefore, the logical answer is it was written by Joseph Smith. Some points to take away here, some main points to take away. The problem with the Book of Mormon is not just a lack of evidence for it, but a lot of evidence against it. And that there are converging lines of evidence pointing to an origin for the Book of Mormon in the time of Joseph Smith. On the other hand, for the Bible, the evidence for the Bible is real and especially plentiful for the New Testament, as you would expect, because the New Testament is closer to our time and more of the external evidence has had an opportunity to survive the ravages of deterioration due to weather and, you know, fires and whatnot. Are there problems in the Bible? Are there difficulties, things that may be hard to understand or hard to resolve? Of course there are. But they're just the kinds of problems you would expect from ancient, authentic literature. And they're the kinds of problems the Book of Mormon doesn't have. So if I could put it this way to you, the Bible has the right kinds of problems, and the Book of Mormon has the wrong kind of problems. I want to direct you to some places you can go for further information. You can see those up on the slide there. You can go to irr.org and search for Book of Mormon. That's a simple way to do it. You can also visit my website, my blog, which is robertbowman.net. I apologize I did not leave any time for Q&A, but if we don't have to leave this room, we can hang around and talk, or I can talk with you out in the hall. Thank you very much.